Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs.
Issue 145.
Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films. Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good.
You feeling spooky? It's time to watch spooky movies.
There's leaves falling outside. It looks like fall. Yeah.
Everything is dying. my wife and I watched Robert Eggers' The Witch last night, which has had a ton of great buzz around it since it premiered at Sundance, I think in 2015, so January of 2015, and then got a release this year, earlier in the year. It's gotten, like I said, a lot of great buzz. I've been holding off on watching it for the right season. I felt like from the trailers it looked like a really good Halloween time movie, and as soon as it seemed appropriate, I jumped at the chance to watch it. It's on Amazon Prime, so that made it even easier. So I had a reaction to it. You've seen it, so we thought it'd be fun to talk about this movie. Now, I think one of the big things we're going to talk about is the ending to the movie, so I should say outright that there's going to be spoilers for this movie. I feel like I might end up using some examples from other movies, so there may also be spoilers for other movies. I'll try to call that out before it happened.
Good call. Yeah.
So, you know, if for some reason I failed to do that, call me out on it later, and I'll go back and edit or something. So now that we've got that off the table, what do you think of the movie?
So, firstly, I should say that it's been a while since I saw it. I think I saw it earlier this year. But I have walked away from it with a very positive impression. It was very striking, and it really stuck with me over time. And I think not just visually, and not just tonally, because I think that's another thing that really sticks out about this movie when you watch it, is that some of it has to do with, I think, the authenticity that he went for and the language that's used, but there's certainly a feeling about this movie that is not contemporary or conventional. And that really, in its own way, is unsettling, I think, but also makes this movie stick in my mind. But in terms of the actual story and the ending, you know, I think I walk away from it like I have many movies that I would put in the category of sort of disturbing horror rather than jump scare horror, which is that you walk away from this movie deeply upset about what has happened, and I think it's intended to make you feel that way, and I think that there's a reason for it and something to say from the filmmaker. So those things all are my takeaways from this movie. I think probably if you go into sort of specifics of the narrative, you may have me at a disadvantage because it's been so long since I saw it. But I definitely think that the overwhelming sense that I came away from this movie with is that really stuck in my mind because it was different and it defied my expectations, which I think good. I think you can make a good horror movie that is conventional and goes the way you expect it to. I don't think you can make a great one that doesn't bother you. You know?
Yes. No, I mean, that is the point
like
of horror.
Rosemary's Baby is a great example to me of that category.
Yes.
Of you walk away from that and you are very upset at some
yes.
level about what has just happened.
That is a deeply unnerving movie. Or Mulholland Drive. You know, I think
sure.
that those... There's a subset of horror that I'm a big fan of is existential horror. So those movies that we talked about, and I would throw The Trial in there. But just these movies that just feel like when you finish watching them, you just feel the weight of the world. You feel like things aren't right, and that you're unnerved. Yeah, and so that's kind of honestly what I was expecting with this film. And I like those kind of films. I totally agree with you that the craft on display here is masterful, especially for a filmmaker's first movie. It's just absolutely mind-blowing. I love the use of language. It reminds me of True Grit, how the Coen brothers used the original language of the novel and did not, you know, modernize it at all. I think that's a really wonderful approach to cinematic storytelling because it makes you have to lean in and really use context clues to put the story together. It's not The Witch isn't a extremely complex story, so it works very well visually and through emotion and cinematically. But yeah, so I mean you kind of mentioned the ending earlier, and for me the movie takes a turn at the end, or kind of the end of the third act, middle of the third act, the falling action of the movie, basically. It takes a turn where the person that we can only call our protagonist totally doesn't necessarily change her mind, but just kind of accepts everything about her circumstances and then just kind of buys into the antagonist of the movie, which is Satan himself. And so it just felt like this weird unearned coda at the end of this movie that irritated me. It was complicated because here you have a movie that for much of its running time presents its actions as potentially entirely psychological. You see cutaways and flashes to witchery going on, but those could totally be imagined. You know, the movie sets up several times that when the witchery stuff happens, the antagonist or the protagonist is either gone or knocked out or something like that. So there's this kind of vague possibility that this is all that this young woman is doing these things, or that it's all coincidence and just kind of incidental. But at the end of the movie, basically, she kills her mother and decides to join Satan and joins some witches in the woods and flies around. This is a movie that all of a sudden, so at the end of the movie, it confirms that within this film, so now we have watched a fantasy film where these, you know, dark black magic things can happen. So that in directly legitimizes the concerns of the parents and the kids and the rest of the movie that Satan is after them and that a witch is after them, which turns them into actual protagonists the same way that the Avengers are protagonists, or in my example, Furiosa and Mad Max are protagonists in Mad Max Fury Road. So if you take that narrative thrust that you've got established now, you're looking at a movie where, spoilers for Mad Max Fury Road, where essentially the end of this movie, it's like if you watched Mad Max, everybody but Furiosa died, and then she was like, well, okay, and then she just went and became Immortan Joe's sex slave. I understand that this movie is doing something different than what Mad Max is trying to do, but in terms of perspective and consistency and actual, like, character arc, it makes very little sense in the internal logic of the movie. And I feel like the only reason it's acceptable for the witch to play this narrative trick and this character trick on its audience is because we all kind of feel like seeing those characters punished. And at the end of the movie, that's what it feels like. The whole thing feels like a big old punishment. a punishment for its characters and a punishment for the people that are watching it. And I see the constructive use of disturbing, unnerving existential horror movies like the ones I mentioned, but there must be something constructive about it. But I feel like there's nothing, there's not nothing. There's not much constructive about The Witch. I feel like it lays there, it presents itself, it punishes its characters, it punishes its audience, and then it leaves. And there's nothing to talk about. Everything is cut and dry.
First of all, there's a couple of, I think it's interesting that this is the reaction that you had to it, because again, I think it's interesting that you chose a couple of examples that are clearly, you know, the heroic myth. And that is the structure of those movies. That's not what's happening here at all. This is a
But that's what's happening
structure.
To the characters. That's what's happening to the characters the entire time. They think they are at war with the devil. And we think that maybe that's not true. And then it is true. And then, you know what I'm saying? Like, to them, they are as in a deadlock, the same way with, you know, they're in a war, the same way that
I think
Furiosa is in a war with the Morton Joe.
Yeah, but I think part of what's happening here, though, is that this movie is designed to interact with an audience. And that audience's expectations, which all horror movies are, in a way that I think probably a straightforward, you know, hero story, a monomyth, is not designed to do. I think part of what's happening here, first of all, is, as you said, the psychological element of it, or the assumed psychological element, comes from our expectations as an audience in 2016, because when we see people like this today and we see characters who think this way, we are conditioned to say they must be wrong, they must be crazy. And I think part of what this movie is trying to do is to say, why don't you, you know, let me introduce you to a world in which these people are not crazy and this is all real, because to people who believe this, it is very real and their fears are very immediate, and you have to understand their fear in order to understand these characters, and I think that's part of what's being done here. The second thing, in terms of what's actually happening with Anna Taylor-Joy's character, can you remind me the main girl's name in the movie?
I think they keep calling her Thomason.
Thomason, okay, yeah. So, I think within the logic of the movie, Part of what's going on here is not the same thing as I think the filmmaker here is definitely playing with your perception of what it means to be defeated in this situation. And I don't think there's necessarily, I don't have a clear answer to this question, but I think part of the issue is, right, her parents would have viewed the outcome of this movie as the worst possible scenario, a tragedy. And I think it's pretty clear that in the movie, Thomason does not view it that way at all. And as far as we are carried with her in this movie, she does not meet a grim end herself. She runs off into the woods and becomes a bride of Satan, essentially. But I think it's supposed to definitely unsettle us and have us asking the question of, you know, whether she views herself to be a victim in that scenario, because she doesn't really like her circumstances up to that point. You know, she's definitely unhappy about the life that her family has created for her. She doesn't really believe in what her father is doing. She doesn't like, from the very beginning, she's more worried about their situation than any of the adults are. In a lot of ways, she sort of sees the truth of what's going on around them more than anybody else in her family. So again, I don't think this is a pro-Satan movie. I think it's using the imagery of Satan and witchcraft to probably have a conversation about the way that women are treated and the way that their lives are determined for them in certainly in 1600s America, but probably there's intended to be some parallels drawn to modern society as well.
Yeah. But again, like, I feel like if that's the case, then that undermines that, because then you still have a woman that is after being undermined for an entire movie, at the end, again, undermining herself by succumbing to the thing that, I mean, she was at times resisting in the rest of the movie. And
it's true, but she chooses, though. I think that's part of the issue is,
Does she? I mean, you basically just said she had no other choice.
I don't know.
There's never that moment of her choosing it. She puts her head down, and then she stands up as if she's in a trance. Like, there's no decision-making there. It was just the next beat in the story.
You've seen that shot more recently than me, so I can't really speak to that moment.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't feel there to be any decision-making in that moment. I thought she was in some sort of trance until she started talking to Black Phillip, and then I thought, then it was clear that, okay, she's acting. But again, it seemed to be out of desperation or out of, I don't know. It just wasn't very clear, and it wasn't very clear, not from a, you know, Tarkovsky kind of Solaris kind of way. It was just not clear because I feel like the film didn't really care. It was just like, well, this is the next place we're going to go. And we're gonna give you this ending.
I don't view it as a nihilistic ending is my answer.
Absolutely it is. Because no, look, okay, let's back up a second, because if other things in the movie weren't presented to us the way they were, then I would say, well, then there's a way you could look at that ending as freedom or as a choice. However, in every conceivable moral structure that humanity can construct, murdering a baby is not okay. So the movie, again, from the opening 10 minutes, sets up this presence in the forest as objectively evil.
Like, oh, yeah, for sure.
So, and the fact that she chooses that at the end, if it's not a downer ending for her to go join the baby killers, then I don't know what the definition of a downer ending is.
Also, I'm pretty sure that what's implied is that the other two children are being cooked in that giant pot that the witches are dancing around.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't get that. Well, great. Yeah, oh, cool. That makes it better. Because those kids were pretty annoying. So maybe
Yeah, they had it coming. They to be fair, though, they did bring the demon goat into the family.
Yes.
But, so I think part of, again, probably the fact that I'm unable to point to very clear parallels is a sign that this is maybe a movie that dances around some interesting ideas and probably didn't peg them down quite as firmly as it could have. You know, and he's a first-time filmmaker, so maybe that's part of it. But I cannot help but look at this movie and the clear imagery of Thomason being viewed as a girl who is certainly reaching sexual maturity. That is, I think, very clearly pointed to in this movie.
Yeah, they say it, yeah.
Okay, and also that her brother's kind of like,
yeah,
he's
gooning on her. Yeah,
yeah. But I think that, along with the way that she is treated by her father and particularly her mother too, but the whole dynamic between her parents and her, she is clearly to me a figure who is being ostracized and who the whole situation that she's in is rigged against. And I think the fact that in the end she does the thing her parents fear the most, there clearly feels to me like it's reaching for some for some sort of feminist commentary. Now, maybe, again, maybe it doesn't hammer
home. But, again,
home
it's
clearly
her parents. The movie confirms her parents' fears and concerns. They're like, at worst, they're worried that their daughter might be captured by the baby killer.
But in a way, I think that it's inevitable, and I think that her parents acting the way they do and treating her the way they do sort of results in what ends up happening and makes that an inevitable conclusion.
What do you call that? Punishment. It's punishing. The whole damn thing is from point A to point Z is just a punishment.
But that's what horror movies do a lot of times.
No, okay. I mean not the entire time. I mean, that's not true. Look at Halloween. Halloween is possibly the greatest horror movie of all time. Jamie Lee Curtis survives. She loses an awful lot, but she still has moments of ups and downs and hills and valleys, or Jaws, or The Babadook, or any other great horror movies. There are relatable character moments. And yes, there are, you know, deeply dark, disturbing ones like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but that movie has a sense of glee and insanity from the beginning, or Evil Dead or something like that, from the beginning that this movie doesn't have. You know, those movies don't have a punishing tone. They just have punishing events, and then they take glee in that, and they use that as to make it a thrill ride. This is not a thrill ride like we talked about, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be, but if it's not going to be a thrill ride, then give me something to chew on and something to take home, and instead of what I felt was at the end of the day just kind of empty artifice, and it ends up being a kind of a shallow movie about, hey, here's, like, it's basically what the what the end title says, which is, hey, here's a witch story as if it was told from the, you know, the 1700s. That's it. And everybody, you know, everybody's miserable, and the heroine totally makes a left turn at the end of the movie that is inconsistent with everything before it.
But first of all, I think we've just established that it's not inconsistent. And secondly, I don't think you can say, I mean, unless you disagree with all of the stuff that I just talked about in terms of whether we're supposed to be thinking about these ideas or not during this movie, I don't think you can fairly call it shallow. Maybe it's a little bit confused, and maybe it doesn't connect on everything. But I think it's swinging in the area of some very interesting ideas.
I think it's, okay, maybe it's not shallow. I think it's more interested in being brutal and being bleak than it is really those ideas that you're talking about.
I definitely do think it's bleak, but again, I think if your perspective in this movie is that this situation that this girl is in is essentially setting her up to turn to to evil things, then it's talking about a bleak subject. So I don't know that it's my worldview, but I certainly feel like something rings true about it, and I think that there is an angry bleakness to a lot of sort of feminist storytelling, because unless you have it turn out that she wins in the end, which might not entirely be realistic, especially in a story set in the
but you were suggesting that in her perspective she may be winning.
Well, it's not a clean victory, certainly, but I don't think she's I think if her
slavery to Satan is not, you know, it's not what you want, but
I mean, look, she chooses the path that she does and is seduced by that path, because the other path, which up to that point had been obviously the correct one, was turning really bad for her. And so, you know, a different path started to look better. So again, I think there's definitely.
But the film then kind of wallows in that and kind of that literally elevates that. You know, like there is a pleasure that the film takes in the end of it.
Oh, I don't think that we're supposed to be shedding any tears for the family.
Right, or we're not supposed to be disturbed by the turn that she takes. It seems like, okay, well, this is...
Oh, no, I think it's supposed to be... I think it is supposed to be disturbing. I mean, I don't think anybody could walk away from that movie feeling like everything that happened was good. It just doesn't necessarily mean that she... It's not the same thing as if she'd been brutally murdered. It just isn't to me. I think it's something more... There's something more interesting with, you know, a little deeper going on if the way the movie ends is she becomes the thing that has been trying to, you know, destroy her family. She joins them. She joins the bad guy. It's definitely something that I don't think we're conditioned to seeing at the end of a horror movie.
And I mean, again, I'm okay with that being a narrative decision if there's peaks and valleys. But again, this movie it's the same drum being beaten the entire time. And again, it's an exercise in misery. And I know there's plenty of other films that do that and that are very well regarded. But that's just, I mean, I guess you gave a disclaimer earlier that you hadn't seen the movie in a while. But I mean, I should have thrown out this disclaimer a long time. I may just be a big old pansy, and that's fine.
Well, I wouldn't say it that way, but I do think it's fair to say that I probably watch horror movies with a degree of detachment that I don't watch a lot of other movies with.
But again, I'm willing to do that if the movie itself doesn't set up, you know, like good characterization and stuff that you get in this movie. So it's like, don't beg me for empathy, and then when I take your empathy, swap me on the head with a newspaper.
You think the characters are too strong for us to properly detach from?
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, the father is a really, really well-drawn character, and I think he is
and
very
well-performed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
then that's another thing I was going to say is that, like, for a stodgy Puritan, you know, religious zealot, he's actually pretty reasonable and nice. To his daughter. I mean, I guess really the only sin he commits towards his daughter in the movie, other than getting her in the situation and then letting her, you know, take some shit for his lie, is treating her like a little girl. You know.
Well, I think part of what's set up early in that movie, if I'm remembering correctly, is the reason they are where they are is because of his
pride, yeah.
His pride, basically. He refused to just sort of take it on the chin and admit that he was wrong and be a part of society. And so, you know, his family suffers because of that pride. And it comes back to bite him a couple of times in the movie where we see that pride sort of rear its head again. And I think with the mother, you know, she very much sort of resents the position that she's been put in. And I think she takes it out on her daughter rather than her husband.
Right. Yes.
Probably,
and I mean,
there's piety or whatever.
There's an interesting circular quality to the way that they spin, you know, Puritan theology and Calvinism and all these things of, you know, how there's no saving ourselves and you know, sin is just going to be this cycle that just kind of keeps pulling us down.
It's Calvinist as shit, man.
And affects, you know, our the generations and stuff like that. But at the same time, if it does that good of a job there, again, it validates all those things and then kind of throws pie in their faces at the end of the movie. So, I mean, I guess we were kind of talking around circles now, but this is a good discussion. I guess at the very least, it's a movie that you know, stirs us to talk.
There's a lot going on. Listen, whether it pulls off what it's attempting to do or not, I think it's pretty clear that this is not you know, The Ring 3. This is not a run-of-the-mill Blumhouse horror movie. There's more going on here. And I do think, first of all, I think that Eggers, is that his name? the director?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, I think he's obviously a name to watch going forward. I think
Taylor-Joy
is somebody to watch going forward. I thought she did a really excellent job. You know, I just think this is a movie that I think it got people's attention in part because it came out of nowhere and was not made by a lot of people that we recognize, and it's clearly very well made.
Yeah, I mean, I can't deny that. But again, I feel like the people that, like the crowd that is accepting this movie, would have a serious problem politically and in many other ways if Mad Max ended the way that I suggested it would. So I think there's a detachment that people are affording themselves here that is only there because it's using a religious structure that is alien to many of us.
Well, and it's a hypothetical question because not very many people saw this movie, unfortunately, in the theater. But I do think that everybody involved got a lot of notice for it, and I think it's probably going to, start some pretty lengthy careers for everybody involved.
Agree. Totally agree.
All right.
Well, I think the Babadook is better. I'll end it.
I'm with you.
Oh, good.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.